So this morning's Torah reading tells a well-known story of Jacob saying to his brother, "I will give you food if you give me the birthright." His brother, Esau, who is famished, says, "Sure, sure, take the birthright. Give me something to eat." And then later on, Jacob deceives his father, Isaac, who apparently is not party to this deal, and either steals or claims, depending on how generous you want to be to Jacob, steals or claims the birthright. Now, the reason you understand that people condemn Jacob, even though he seems to have made a deal, is because if he made a legitimate deal, he wouldn't have to fool his father, right? He would just say, "It's okay, Esau and I made a deal, the birthright belongs to me." The problem that we have sometimes when we read this is not only that Rivka, his mother, I don't even want to say collaborates, she engineers the whole thing, but also that the Torah does not go on to say, "And what Jacob did was bad." It doesn't say Jacob stole the birthright and that was a naughty thing to do. It just tells the story. But in order to understand why this is, you have to look at the way, by and large, the Torah describes human life, which is in terms of actions and consequences, not in terms of judgments coming out of the sky. It describes life the way life happens. We all do things good and bad, and sometimes we don't discover whether they're good or bad until we see later on the consequences of our actions. The easiest way to see this is, of course, if you're a parent. You force your kid to take piano lessons, and later on, they love the piano, or you force your kid to take piano lessons, and later on, they hate music. And you don't know, when you force your kid to take piano lessons, what the result is going to be. And only in retrospect can you know whether it was a good thing, and later on your child will say, "I'm so grateful that you made me take lessons even though I didn't want to." Or whether later on they'll say, "You know what I really hated about my childhood were those stupid piano lessons." You can't know. So the way life works is you take actions, you try to take actions you think are good, and later on you see consequences. And this is what happens to Jacob. Jacob does something, whether he thinks it's good is an open question, but clearly Rivka believes that it's the right thing to do, his mother. He steals the birthright, but then you realize that the Torah knows that it is a problematic thing to do by what happens to Jacob later. First, he has to run away from home. And remember that running away from home in the ancient times is not like today. There are no hotels, there are no motels, there are no rental car agencies, the streets are dangerous. I mean, we don't think about this, but remember, this is a world in which wild animals shared the world with people. It isn't like cities today where you're not likely to see a mountain lion walking down the street. In ancient times, in fact, we know that beasts were prevalent and people would get killed by wild animals and also by other people, and there weren't effective police forces. So running away from home was already taking your life into your hands. Remember where Jacob sleeps? He sleeps on the road with a rock under his head, right? Not at Motel 6, which, you know, God forbid any of our children should actually have to stay at a Motel 6, right? For us, that would be like sleeping with a rock under your head. But I want you to know how many years working at Ramah we stayed at Motel 6, and it was fine. I just want to say, just want to put that out there to all of you whose kids grew up in Beverly Hills and don't know what Motel 6 is. He sleeps with a rock under his head. Then he has to get a job at Laban's place, right? Who is his uncle. And Laban tries to cheat him. And not only does he try to cheat him once, he tries to cheat him twice. Jacob falls in love with Rachel, and Laban switches Leah with Rachel. And the Midrash, that is the rabbis, imagine Jacob saying to Rachel, "How could you have done this to me? You know that I loved you. How could you switch one person for the other?" And she says, "Is there a teacher that doesn't have students?" In other words, it's exactly what you did to your father. You switched one person for the other. So you were the teacher. You think nobody learned from you? I learned from you. I learned you switched yourself with for Esau. I switched myself for Leah. Or Leah for myself, actually. So that's the direct consequence of what happens. And the Torah never says, by the way, look at this. Just as Jacob switched, so did Rachel and Leah. It leaves us to draw the conclusion from life that this is what happens to people. That people who lie aren't trusted, that people who cheat get cheated, all the things that happen in life happen in the Torah. Then he finally gets his wages from Laban, and later on, of course, he finds out that Esau is coming for him. And he's terrified, and that fear is the fear that all of us have at times, that the wrong that we've done has finally caught up with us, and we can't evade it anymore. And we have to face the consequences of what we've done. And then you have to face it like the person you were or like the person you want to be. And here's where Jacob has his redemption, because he comes face to face with Esau and he bows before him, which is his way of acknowledging what he has done. And Esau forgives him. He forgives him. They embrace and they weep. I mean, the rabbis give Esau a hard time, but in the text itself, it doesn't say that Esau has done anything wrong through all of this. He's the aggrieved party. He's the one who was cheated. He's the one who, he does say, I'm going to kill my brother, which is not a nice thing, I grant you, to say about your brother. But you can understand in the fury of the moment, he says, as soon as my father dies, I'm going to kill you. But I have to tell you, I grew up with three brothers. I would not tell you that none of us ever said, I'm going to kill you, because in fact, we all said it to each other at various times, although Esau might have meant it a little bit more than we did. We're all still alive. None of us has actually tried to kill each other, although sometimes blows were exchanged. But light ones, usually on the shoulder. But you understand that when Esau says that, he means it, and that later on he grows up and he forgives Jacob. And that everything that Jacob has gone through, though, is a consequence of this moment. So even though the Torah doesn't say, look, Jacob is doing a really bad thing, it shows you with the effect in his life what he does. And the Torah's essential message is that nothing that you do in your life of any significance doesn't have consequences later. Nothing that you say to someone that is unkind doesn't have consequences. No apology that you make doesn't have consequences. No cruelty, no kindness, that it all does. And Jacob is a beautiful illustration of that. But of course, the Torah is not so explicit as to just say, this is going to have consequences, look here and here and here, because the same thing is true in life. Right? There is no voice that says to us, oh, the reason you're going through this is because you did that. We have to make the connections ourselves, and we have to do it with the help of people who know us and care about us and can help us connect those dots in our own lives so that we, like Jacob, can learn from what we've done wrong and do better. And with that, let's bring everybody in as we turn up to the Haftarah for this morning.